It's a football fans podcast and people behind CelticUnderground.net. I am joined tonight by Anthony Murray, and then St. Anthony joins Anthony Murray and I. It's not great listening, so if you turn it off, understandable. It may be a bit over-dramatic at times in our opinion, but that's the nature of football fans. Anyway, this is me, Anthony Murray, with him, blah, blah, blah. So 20 minutes after the game, I'm trying to be calm. So first up, would you sack the manager?
Yes, if he hasn't done the honourable thing and resigned, he should be gone by the time this podcast drops or is downloaded or whatever the term is. Yeah, goner, bye-bye. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Now, some people listening to this might think I'm being an arsehole by asking that question, but right now if Lennon walked into the room, I mean, he'd probably win, but I'd want to kick absolute fuck out of him.
I think he probably would win.
I think he probably would win, yeah.
But, I don't know, he'll probably retreat to his boozer in the West End and have people pat him on the back and say he's doing a good job. You know, the same sycophants that have convinced himself he's a Celtic manager up to this point. An absolute fucking disaster.
I'm going to go through some things first of all. So, first of all, there is the absolute fuckwittery, arsehole, unfathomable thing of deciding to not play with a striker. What did you make of that team selection?
My mum sent me a message, like, I don't know, 20 minutes in, saying something like, "Where's the striker we signed?" And my default was, I've not looked at the bench, or maybe Ayeti is, you know, not cup tied, but, you know, not registered or something. So I assumed Ayeti must not be cup tied. That leaves Klamala, and my thinking is, I guess he just doesn't rate the boy. I guess we just want to absolutely destroy this boy's confidence. You know, just absolute flushes self-belief down the toilet, and, you know, you buy a guy that, you know, we tell ourselves he's good. We know he's not a world beater. He's coming from the Polish league and that. But
don't forget, if we played a Polish team at this round, they'd beat us. So don't decry the Polish league. We'd be fucking struggling to get past the fucking Faroe Islands if it was a Champions League final qualifier. Anyway, carry on.
I'd be really intrigued to see if you asked the Celtic management, what is the population of Hungary? Do you know what I mean? Just what do they think Hungary is? Is it a pub team that you can go and play with no strikers? And this isn't, you know, Craig Levein going away to the Czech Republic who are better than us and you're just trying to park the bus. This isn't Walter Smith. This is Celtic at home in the easy stages of a European qualifying tournament. And we've gone in to a Hungarian champion with no striker. Just the lack of respect that shows is an absolute disgrace.
So before the game, I was coming home and I was listening to Sports Sound beforehand, and Lennon was interviewed on Sports Sound, and it demonstrated one of the things I've noticed before about BBC Sports Scotland journalists is they shit their pants about asking blunt questions, right? So the obvious question before the game to Neil Lennon was, "So Neil, why are you playing with no striker when you spent £8 million on strikers in the last two transfer windows?" And what Kerry Dean-Itsan actually said was, "So Neil, obviously with Edouard picking up a knock and not making it, you're not playing with a striker, but I assume you're going to tell me that Ryan Christie is a good enough replacement." Shits his pants, shits the bed. leaves it for, and then Lennon says, yeah, yeah, blah, 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 bag of shite. But anyway, Ayeti and Klamala are not match fit. Right. So I can sort of get the Ayeti thing. He's just had a season in England where he's not really played that much and then goes on holiday. So I can get him being not quite match fit. So the obvious follow-up question to that would be, Neil, can you explain to me why a player who's been under your responsibility since January is not match fit? But he doesn't ask that question. So can you tell me, Anthony, why do you think Klamala's not considered not match fit?
I guess he just doesn't rate him. You know, he's bought him in a panic. Christ knows what our... Like I say, I'm not picking on Klamala. I haven't given up on Klamala. Our scouts clearly thought they saw something in him. So we've bought him. We've been fed this myth that he's bulked up and all that, which might be true. Oh, he shaved his head. Looks like a hard man. And then you have to play him. And particularly at Celtic Park, he's a fast young man. You've got a huge, big park. You know, go and run in it. You know, give him a chance to prove himself. But he's clearly, I mean, he's obviously not got the greatest touch in the world. You know, he's no a world beater. But clearly he's done enough in training to completely lose their, you know, belief in him. Which is odd to me because, I don't think he's looked that bad when I've seen him. And he's just lost faith in him and thought, right, you know, it's only the Hungarian champions. There's only 10 million people in Hungary. They're only a country in Central Europe where people take sport quite seriously to quite a professional level. I noticed the thing you're always on about the blue chip sponsorship that we are incapable of getting.
Yep.
While we've got our shitty gambling and booze on our jersey. And Ferenc Varos, you've got T-Mobile. I don't know if they're getting a lot of money from T-Mobile, but it bloody looks good. Do you know what I mean? They must have some kind of, you know, capitalist system in Hungary that is delivering some kind of living to the people there, you know? And we've just... the lack of respect for going into that team, you know, with Sergei Rebrov, he was a great, great player. I don't know if he's a great coach, but they're clearly not the pub team that we've just treated them as. And we've got our just desserts.
Well, I mean, the one thing I would say about that is, no, they're clearly not the pub team, but equally, our revenue last season was 80-odd million quid. We are valued by the London Stock Exchange as worth about £140 million. I did a quick search before coming on here, so this might not be exact, but it's the best I could find. Their revenue was 25 million quid. So what are we doing losing a one-off game to a team that we absolutely dwarf revenue-wise?
We don't... I'm not picking on a particular player just now because I don't think it was particularly his fault today, although I don't think it helped. You don't pay a premium wage earner, being a 35-year-old who's past it. That could be two very good young European midfielders and strikers on 20 grand a week. If you cut that wage in two, I know it's not that simple, but I'm just making a point. You take that sideways pass merchant who's never really, let's be honest, let's flush that myth that he ever really dominated European football down the toilet. Great passing stats against Man City twice. What about the other 9.5 years, you know? The other 60 European games where he got shown up. The fact that we've gone into the season with 35-year-olds, I wonder what other teams playing in these qualifiers are starting this game with a 35-year-old in midfield. There can't be many.
You see, the reason we're doing that is because, you know, obviously with no striker, we've got even more midfielders in the park, so we've got no other spare midfielders. Oh, wait a minute. In January, we spent £2.5-3 million on a midfielder that we never fucking play in Soro. Is he another one that we don't like after we got him here?
That's surely just the fact that there's an immovable object there, you know? I mean, Kouassi came and went. I don't think Kouassi was particularly good, but he never got the chance, really. But like I say, I don't think he was very good. Soro is just, the same template, right? Come in, well, you're not actually going to get a game because Bruni plays there, doesn't he? Bruni plays there. Bruni shouts in the faces of journeyman defenders when we get winners against them. That's what we need. That's what Celtic's all about.
Oh, we need a leader on the park. I mean, you take him out of things, or you'd be amazed how much we'd lose in a game. I'm being told in the last couple of weeks.
I tell you, we thought Peter Grant and Gary Caldwell could point. Brown's the king of the pointers at this point. He's the greatest pointer we've ever had.
So, I just cannot get my head right. Like I say, I understand the principle of Ayeti's not quite there, match fitness wise, right? But this is a game we absolutely, under no circumstances, can we afford to lose it, right? So either, from my book, if Ayeti's good enough to be fit enough to be on the bench, that means either you play him until he runs out of gas, and you bring Kamala on, or play Christie up front because you played with a striker, or you think he's got enough legs in him to play for 20, 25 minutes. See if you're in a game where there's been 7 balls across the box that if we had a striker, he'd have put the ball in the back of the net. You don't wait till the 78th minute to bring him on. If you're waiting till the 78th minute, he's not fit enough to be on the bench. Is in my book. And then if you can't even bring Klamala on at all, when Stevie Wonder could see that you needed to play a striker, then don't put Klamala on the bench. You're wasting his time. Sell him. Loan him out. Whatever you need to do. But don't stick him on the bench and not play him when it's fucking obvious you need to be playing a striker.
And long term, the fact that we don't have a Diddy striker there to turn to. I was thinking about it. I remember in the 90s, Barcelona used to go out and buy the top scorer in La Liga every year. You know? There was a guy called Cuellar that they bought, Juan Antonio Pizzi, Mejo Codro. They would always go out and just buy the other guy that was scoring goals in Spain. Did the guy ever get in the team ahead of Romario, Ronaldo, Stoichkov? No, he didn't. But they had him, you know? Juventus did the same. Juventus used to always have a Michele Padovano, a Nicola Amoruso, some journeyman guy that was just there to ride the bench, knew his place. Why don't we have that? Why is Eamon Brophy or Michael O'Halloran, some guy that would happily be there just to be a go-to striker in a pickle? Why do we not have one of them? I'm not saying they're Celtic class. I'm not saying that that's what we should be building our team around. But why is it? Oh, Griffiths is a fanny. Ayeti's ill. Klamala's shite. Edward's injured. All right, we don't have anyone else. That's absolutely absurd.
I mean, yeah, I think so. A couple of things about it, right? So Klamala, I find it incomprehensible that the manager says he's not fit. Griffiths, well, if he couldn't even get on the bench tonight, then just fucking punt him. Sell him for free. What is the point in having him hanging about the club if you've got a guy that's been there all summer who can't get himself matched, who can't get himself fit? Punt him. Give him away. Whatever you need to do. So let's talk about the goals, because of course, although it's doing my head in trying to work out why the manager thought it was a good idea to play with no striker, the fact is that we gifted 2 goals tonight. So talk me through the first goal.
The first one's a corner, knocked to the edge of the box, rolls across. Ayer slow, Brown slow. I'm sure there's others involved, but they were the two that I thought were, as close as they could have been. But they're, they kind of waltz across, and presumably a Hungarian international or someone, you give them a shot with that much space, he's going to pick it out. I don't know if the keeper could have done better. Maybe the keeper could have done better. But the guy struck it quite well. But you know, that's what a professional footballer should be able to do if you give him 2 meters of space to do it.
So can you? I mean, first of all, on the first goal, just actually before the corner, I don't know if you saw, there was a guy out for a jog wearing a Celtic strip. I don't know how he managed to go on. He was just out for sort of jogging like I would jog. He was wearing El Hamed's number. So I don't know how that happened, but there was this random punter who couldn't give a fuck and was a lazy ass shite who was out for a jog and then manages to get on the pitch. And then they get a corner, and then the corner comes in, and there's 7,350 Celtic players run off to the right hand side of the box as the ball gets played over to the left if you're in the goalkeeper's position. So I couldn't quite understand what was happening there. Where the fuck was we had 75 midfielders on the park. Where the fuck were they when the second ball at the corner?
Oh, let's excuse McGregor. He won the header, you know, so he tried his best.
He went off for a wander somewhere. He actually was in the perfect position to just walk forward and block the shot, but he goes for a wander along with the other 75,000 other Celtic players off nowhere near the ball. I mean, honestly, it was schoolboy stuff. So then what did you think of our performance after we decided to give Fratham a goal? What did you make of that?
I thought by the time we reached the second half, by the time we reached half time, we had, cemented our place in the match. You know, we dominated the last sort of 15 minutes. El Yunusi could have scored a goal. That lovely touch he took. It kind of reminded me, remember that shite Norwegian that we bought and then we punted him and then he scored against us a couple of years later? The Berget or someone like that. The goal he scored was very similar to the one that El Yunusi didn't score tonight, but it was a similar chance. Shots from distance, which is inevitable when you don't have a striker, because there's no point putting it in the box. So you're really just trying to work your way to the edge of the D and let it, you know, unleash one. And, you know, El Hamid hit a decent one. El Yunusi hit a decent one. McGregor hit one on his wrong foot. Forrest hit a decent one again on his wrong foot. So, yes, it's not like you've got players in strong positions dispatching good effort. So probably the defence was doing its job. But we did build ourselves into the match. And at halftime, although it was, you know, the writing was on the wall, we came out and we got ourselves back in it. Fortunately, it wasn't quite as briefly as usually when we let in a goal in this situation, now I start the clock, you know, Bayern Munich or Cluj, or, you know, how quick are we going to blow this? At least we, you know, we rode it out for 15 minutes or 20 minutes before we shat it and got ourselves knocked out of the Champions League again.
So then there is the second goal that they scored. Now, obviously, I've already commented that I thought there was a guy impersonating a footballer out for a jog. Just before the corner for the first goal, he managed to get back on the park for the second goal. So, can you tell me what you think happened for their second goal?
You try and put yourselves in a Ferencváros fan's shoes and say, "All right, our striker burned a guy and slotted it," but really, it was like slow motion, wasn't it? It was a guy ambling back. Again, in the same way we've underestimated our opponents en masse, it's a guy looking at an individual and saying, "Oh, I've got this guy," and until you don't. Until he, you know, walks away from you and tucks it under the keeper, you know, was he nutmegged, I think? You know, just a shit bit of goalkeeping, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, just so, so typical of Celtic at this stage and on this stage, that we make mediocre footballers look better than they are, you know? Or maybe I'm being harsh, maybe I'm underestimating them, but I'm not convinced, you know, they were a great team. It's, in that sense, it's Cluj all over again.
No, they're not a great team. I mean, obviously, we've got to pay them some respect because, as you've quite rightly pointed out, they are the champions of Hungary. But they're not a great team. We dominated most of the game. I was trying to get Celtic's transfer window up and suddenly a man says, hello, everyone. They're not utterly shite. But in the scheme of our revenue versus their revenue, we should not be getting knocked out by teams at that level. And as I say, not to sound like Jerry McCulloch was trying to do on Celtic TV, because unfortunately that's what he's got to do. We had the majority of the ball and the majority of possession, and they had two chances and scored both of them. And that was shit. And so you've got to then look, which is why I was trying to get Transfer Market up, but they had a wee autoplay video that then started feeding through. I was trying to get a note of our transfer dealings, and it's just remarkable how much money, I can't get it to hand, it's remarkable how much money we are pissed up against the wall by signing people at 2 to 3 million quid that the manager patently doesn't think is good enough.
And there's no character about how we do it. Do you know what I mean? It is a sort of Del Boy, wheeler dealer, last minute, who can we get in, you know, a coach or a manager that's got no faith in the youth teams. You know, we're never going to produce a player, but at the end of the day, if we had six Celtic youth products in the park tonight that, you know, are scattered throughout the SPFL as journeymen, would they have done any worse than the imposters that we're paying money for? Like, would, you know, really, did you see those two or three shite passes that Julian hit at one point when the game was tight? It's like, all right, just give the ball away. Do you know what I mean? Fucking the boy Findlay at Kilmarnock could do that. You know, he'd cost a lot less. You know, if we are paying total imposters. I don't know, folk that think Ncham's obviously a decent technical footballer, but Ncham's going to leave us and be an utter journeyman. He's not Clarence Seedorf. He's not going to kick on and be a world beater. He's going nowhere. So there you are. You know, I think Frimpong's a good player. You know, he's got a lot of potential, so I wouldn't throw him, you know, under the bus right now. I'd say El Yunusi had some nice moments tonight. You know, I wouldn't pick on him really. Obviously, he blows a bit hot and cold, but you can clearly see there's a lot of talent there. Whereas, just lining up your team as a collective to not have a focal point, so you can have as much talent as you want scattered around a non-existent striker, I mean, you're just making it hard for yourself.
But that's what I was going to say. You know, in defence of the forward players, how can they play when there's nobody making the runs of a striker?
It's like, yes, Spain went out and won Euro 2012, wasn't it, without a striker, but you know that works when you've got a front six midfielders of, you know, Iniesta and David Silva and etc. you know that. We, you know, the idea that you can go out with, you know, six relative journeyman footballers and think, all right, we'll do what Spain did. Yeah, that'll work. Just an absolute disaster. Just so stupid.
So we are now going to be joined by St. Anthony. So I know you have to drop out at some point to avoid yourself going to bed in the early hours of the morning, but I'm going to get St. Anthony on the site so that he can also have a rant about how utterly mind-boggling incredibly stupid the manager is. So
you are lucky in that I live close to the Canadian border, that I'll probably hear them laughing in my sleep.
So we are now joined by St. Anthony. So St. Anthony and I were just really continually saying, this is shite, isn't it, over and over again. So do you want to join in about how shite it is?
I think there was an element of predictability tonight, given the fact that we blew it against Cluj last season, we lost against Copenhagen, and, you know, Ferenc Faris came in a one-off game and beat us. So there's a pattern beginning to emerge there, in as much as fairly mediocre teams are coming in, not just beating us, but they're beating us at Celtic Park. And yet, at that point, when a pattern emerges, you have to say, well, you know, what is the manager doing about it? Because if something isn't working over the course of time, then you need to put steps in place to change the to change what's happening. And as I said, it's just too predictable.
I mean, we just mentioned Ferenc Faris had two chances in the game, and we gifted gifted them both the chances. The second one in particular was a gift.
I know.
Utter gift. But then, as we were just talking about, the forward players could have played as nicely as they liked. If they didn't have a focal point of a striker, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. I think what the thing that struck me tonight was when you think back to Martin O'Neill's great days in Europe, Martin was very pragmatic, and I do feel for the defence in as much as there's no protection for the midfield. Brown, and I don't want to pick on individuals necessarily, but Brown is asked to do the work of two men in the middle of the park in European games, defensively. And really what we should have is, if you think back to the days of Lennon and Lambert, in order to get to the Celtic defence, you had to get past A2 first. And they were a great barrier for the defence. And for that reason, we lost very, very few goals in Europe over that period at Celtic Park. It was maybe different away from home right enough, but certainly at home, we weren't leaking goals the way we are now. And I just feel that we're far too open in the middle of the park and far too expansive. And it makes it too easy for even, as I say, mediocre teams to cut us open and create chances against us.
Anthony, I don't know about you, but I'd quite be happy if Brown would play like one player in the middle of the park. Never mind trying to fill the role of two. What do you think?
I think that's a fair point, that, you know, on the best run we had in Europe in my lifetime, you know, we did have a, you know, belts and braces, I guess, in that position. So I think that's a fair point. If only Lennon could see that, you know, the job he did was quite important once upon a time. And also have the humility to say, you know, by the time Lennon himself was getting hooked in a cup final for Gary Caldwell, much to his chagrin, you know, his time was up. You know, and if maybe he's trying to live out some fantasy via Brown that, you know, the old guy can keep going, but he clearly cannot.
So I'm going to read out what the manager said. The game was actually, right, there's a bit of this that I agree with, but there's a bit that is the obvious next thing to say to him. The game was actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. But we didn't take our chances, and we had plenty of them, Neil Lennon told BBC Scotland. I'm not saying Ferenc Faros are a bad team. They're not. but we had so much we should have won. That doesn't make us weak. It doesn't make we weak, me weak, but people will cast aspersions. And asked what message he would give to his players, Lennon said, get your mentality right, get your attitude right. If you don't want to be here, leave. Right, so I agree that the game was a lot easier. As I've just said, Ferencváros had two chances, and I counted at least seven occasions where we put the ball where a striker would have been. So maybe I'm being silly, but I would suggest then that's the manager's fault for not playing a fucking striker.
You do have to wonder that the boy Kamalas came for Poland, and you can understand at the end of last season how he played sparingly because he most speed of the Scottish game and stuff like that. But I mean, he's had a long break there since March, and apparently he's built up in his physique. And if he can't play tonight, then there's no hope for him. If I was him, I would get into Lennon in the morning and ask for a transfer. Because and I fail to understand how Lennon could say before the game he's short of match fitness. After pre-season, he should be at peak fitness. You should be bursting to get a game. You should be bursting to go. And I'm not saying this to be controversial, but I know Griffiths has had his issues. But for whatever reason, if Klamala can't play and Edward is injured and Ayeti isn't fit, then...
If what you're saying is that Lennon's just not playing him because he's so fed up with him,
but then sack
the manager. Because we've got a fit striker and just got knocked out of Europe because the manager didn't want to play him.
Well, that's all I'm saying is if I'd have been in Lennon's shoes tonight picking a team and I'm told that Edward's injured... And I'm told that Ayeti isn't match fit, and I'm told that Klamala's no match fit, I would have been sending an SOS for Griffiths. Because while we're paying him a wage, we're entitled to get something out of him, some sort of performance.
Yes. So I'm confused then. So what you're saying is you think Griffiths is more fit than Klamala and Ayeti?
Well, I'm presuming that if Griffiths is in training, and he's been training for the last couple of weeks since he's wee... meltdown with the COVID thing. If he has been in training and he's up to speed, we should have played him.
What do you think, Anthony?
I'd play a quarter fit Griffiths in a game that we should be making chances every day of the week. You know, he's the striker. If Griffiths could stand, he should have been on the park tonight because the guy's a goal machine. Total dickhead, but a goal machine. And we've shot ourselves in the foot by not picking anyone.
Yeah, so that's my point. If you think Griffiths is more fit than Ayeti and Klamala, and the manager didn't play him, and we'd get knocked out of Europe, and it's clearly obvious that we created chances, and after the game the manager has said, that was an easier game than I expected... then the manager, I think the manager should be sacked on the spot, summarily.
I think you're being a bit harsh there, Brian. I mean, we're all hurting and it's the heat of the moment and things like that, but sometimes you get one of the nights where nothing goes your way and really
well,
that's what happens.
We've had three of
those
nights at this point.
Yeah, but I think more so tonight, I had a horrible feeling when I heard. Sometimes I got a feeling. I had a horrible feeling when I heard Eddie was injured. That we were going to be in a bit of trouble because I think the problem with Edward is he's become something of a talisman towards the supporters and towards the team. And there's a psychological thing with a player like that. But when he plays, everybody's happy. The players are happy. The fans are happy, and things are the hunky dory. And when he doesn't play, it's almost as if the fans are saying, oh no, what are we going to do without Edward? Now, he's an exceptional footballer and he's the best player in the country by a country mile. But, you know, it's very disappointing that when any player's injured that we don't have somebody to come in and take his place. And it was horrible that night watching the number of times a ball went across the face of goal where any striker that has got a decent instinct in the area... Well, we'd probably have two tap-ins at least.
Yeah, but the obvious point then is you're saying the managers cost us about £40 million?
Well, if you were going to hypercritical, you could say that perhaps the board, of course, is £40 million by not investing in the team quick enough to get the players to settle. Because if a Yeti's no match fit, then why did they not get him 2, 3, 4 weeks before it? Now, I have sympathy for the board and for Lennon, in as much as it's very difficult to get the players, your first-choice players. It would be ideal if you could just go out and spend money every summer and get everybody we wanted. So I know that maybe he's not getting his first-choice players. And Ayeti, I think the delay with him was...
Yeah, but what you're saying is he didn't play a player who's fit and could have played.
No, I don't mean it like that. I mean, if we'd signed Griffiths. No, if we'd signed Ayeti earlier, then he would have been match fit tonight and could have made a difference. But the reason we couldn't get him is I don't doubt for a minute that Ayeti was holding off for a better offer from a better league. So when players come to Celtic, we're basically their best choice or their best offer. You know, they're not going to look at Celtic and look at maybe a team in the Spanish league and favour us over it. So I don't doubt for a minute Ayeti held off for a couple of weeks in the hope that a better offer would come in. And then when a better offer didn't come in, he probably thought to himself, right, I'm going to go there because at the moment that is the best offer I am likely to get. So that holds us back. We never ever go into European qualifiers fully prepared. There's either players not coming in or there's players getting sold or a mixture of both. We never have a settled lineup, but we never seem to go in with a bit of momentum. We always go in, for want of a better phrase, with our trousers down.
Right. But Klamala we signed in January.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's wholly the manager's responsibility as to whether he's match fit or not. Or good enough. Because the manager was at the club when he was signed. Mm-hmm. And Griffiths has been there for some time, and both of you have said that you would play a 25% fit Griffiths.
Tonight I would have,
Right, so...
Rather than have Christie run about like a headless chicken up front, and I am not doubting his enthusiasm and his attitude. He tried his heart out, but, you know, he's patently not a striker.
So surely, Anthony, I ask you, that's wholly the manager's responsibility if we're not playing without a striker.
Absolutely. I mean, who else can you blame? You know, I mean, long term, he's partially responsible. In the immediate term, he's absolutely responsible. So, you know, that's that.
So...
You can't get away from the fact that Lennon's got to take the criticism coming his way, because team selection, as soon as I heard the lineup, my immediate thoughts went back to Craig Levein, who got slaughtered, and rightly so, for not playing anybody up front. But I don't think I don't think Lennon has learned his lesson for last season. The reason that we won the league last season was basically that when we lost to Rangers at the new year, they were in the ascendancy. The momentum was all Rangers. And in fairness to Lennon, he changed the setup. He played two up front, whatever two you care to mention, and it came good. We scored a lot of goals. We played a lot better. We seemed the two up front really suited us. And I was horrified at the beginning of the season when he went back to the one up front, because he's not learned any lessons for last season.
At that point, we're just a sort of sad tribute act staring down at English football saying, oh, how do they do it? Oh, they've got a Didier Drogba up front and three guys off him. Oh, we'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, we're just copying something that we don't need to copy. We're playing in the Scottish Premier League. Do you know what I mean? Just fucking load the team with strikers. Play four strikers. Huh? Do you know what I mean? We'd batter everyone because we can afford better players.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we have to try and do the thing that Chelsea do or Arsenal do or Man United do, but just with a sort of tooled down version of it.
Yeah. The other thing that scares me is in the last three Celtic Rangers games, Rangers have had the best of the play. And I don't think there's any doubt in that. The game at Ibrox, we won 2-0. We scored against a run of play, and then we scored in injury time. And the game at Hampden was honestly embarrassing. It was so one-sided. And then the game at Celtic Park, I know that Christie missed a penalty and it may have changed the course of the game. But I felt that I never felt at any time that Celtic played well or were in control at that time. And I just don't think that you know, I'm dreading playing Rangers again because I think that Gerrard's cute enough to know he's got a wee recipe here. And Lennon has to change the team. He has to change the shape of the team. And I would urge him when we play Rangers to drop Scott Brown because Scott Brown looks so far off the pace. When you play against, he's okay playing against the likes of Hamilton at home and maybe even Dundee United at Tannadice. But when you get into European games and you're playing teams of higher calibre, get into a Rangers game where the games are a wee bit more frantic, he doesn't have the legs anymore.
That's the mistake we've made, though. By not making it gradual, like yes. Paul Lambert, you know, we wound down Paul Lambert's career. He mm-hmm. saved face. Everyone's a winner. We've put ourselves in a position where we're going to go to Ibrox or you know, play the Huns, and he'll get dropped and it'll be humiliating. And it'll be a victory for them before the kickoff's even been made. Tactically, mm-hmm. it might work for us. But we are, yeah, I mean, Brown's a legend, I get that. But we're going to humiliate him by not planning for that.
Joe, one of my concerns, I remember the way fans treated Roy Aitken right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And basically were offering to pay his taxi fare when he left to go to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm. You don't want that to happen.
And you don't want that to happen. But unfortunately, Neil Lennon's put in a position where already online you're seeing people talking like that. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, I've mentioned before in the podcast about how people talk about boxers aging overnight. Yeah. I wonder if this 5-month layoff has been the problem for Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And that his decline has accelerated massively by not having 5 months of football.
You would actually think the opposite there. You would think five months would give him a rest and, you know, it recharge the batteries and it would come back full of energy because the problem with guys at that age is you normally find that if they don't get a good pre-season, then it will affect them and they might not have the energy that they would normally have. But I get what you're saying there because sometimes if you're of a certain age and you're, I don't doubt they're training, but there's a big difference between training and match fitness. I mean, professionals will tell you that. You can certainly be fit enough in training, but playing games is different. And I just think since the start of the season, Scott Brown's not really been at the races. Certainly not the Scott Brown you would expect to see.
But do you see any sign, Anthony, that the manager's going to change the midfield and that Brown would be the one to go?
I think he made a substitution the other week in a game that we were winning, didn't he? Like, you know, he brought him off and you know, gave, you know, basically a rest, you know, sort of end of game rest. But I don't think there is any evidence that he's going to, you know, I mean, he's like his first lieutenant, isn't he? He's not going to turn on him.
No.
And I don't think Brown's good. Although I think he is very humble and affable off the pitch. Yeah, I don't think he's humble enough to put his hands up and say, I'm done, you know? Maybe he is, maybe he's not. You know, some players have done that in history, you know. I remember it was Gary Neville. Remember Gary Neville in an interview, you know, Ferguson was begging him to sign a new contract. And Gary Neville said, you know, I love Manchester United too much to go out and embarrass myself against Man City. You know, and you know, he could have played on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
His manager wanted him to, mm-hmm. but he was humble enough to say, nah, there's something bigger than me here, and I don't want to hurt it. you know, that'd be my advice for Brown right now, you know.
The other thing I've got to say about the midfield at the moment is I was looking at Cham tonight, and again, I don't want to pick individuals, but I wonder the problem with Cham is what is his position? Because is he a holding midfield player? Is he an attacking midfield player? He seems to, for me, he flatters to deceive. And he'll play the odd good game, maybe at Rugby Park or at Douglas Park, and people will rave about him. But I think, in general terms, I don't think Cham brings a great deal to the table.
Aye, Stephen, I said something similar earlier on, so I think we're on the same page there.
The thing you mentioned earlier, saying about, you know, we always go into these games not prepared. But are we any different to many other clubs in and around Europe who buy players to then sell them? They're all in the same boat. So the issue for me is, why are we not prepared? Why are we not dealing with it? I mean, the manager has said tonight in the thing that I read out, you know, if there are players who don't want to be here, just leave, right? And I've said that I'd heard that he was particularly pissed off at Kilmarnock with Aya, Christie, and Cham and Edward, because he felt their minds were elsewhere and they weren't given anything, right? And I'm not saying that they're not trying, but if you've ever been in a job and you know that there's a possibility of getting a job with another company, you're still working for your company, but there's a wee part of you just thinking at times when it's hard about, oh, maybe
psychologically.
Yeah, right. But if the manager believes that, why did he pick off? Why, apart from Edward, who wasn't fit, why did he pick those players in the team tonight? If that's the manager's attitude.
Well, he's obviously picked what he thinks is the strongest team on paper, but I don't think any of us would have disagreed with it, other than the fact that if Edward was fit, he would have been in for Sunday. But talking about the Edward and maybe not wanting to be there, I think, and people might accuse me of being pessimistic here, I don't think Edward is going to be here at the end of the transfer window, because he will want to play at a higher level. He sees himself as a Champions League player, and I think he is, given his talent. And also, the board, now that they've not got the Champions League money coming in, have to balance the books, because we don't make losses. You know, if there's any prospect of making a loss, somebody's getting sacrificed. And it might be Ayer, I don't know. I don't think anybody would pay £20 million for Ayer, I have to say. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's in that bracket. But Edward is clearly the crown jewels. And if an English team comes in and chaps the door with maybe upwards of £25 million, then Edward's not going to be there in 3 or 4 weeks' time. I've resigned myself to that much.
Anthony?
I think, that would seem the case. I think it'd be a big gamble to let Edward go if you're not going to, you know, invest in some kind of replacement. You know, if we got 25 million and then scattered 10 million of it across the SPFL and scooped up all the best players in Scotland, that would, you know, I'd be happy with that, because, you know, it would blunt in our opponents, and I think there's some good decent players out there to be bought.
Anthony, could you name a couple? I'm not being funny, but I'm really interested to have an idea of who you mean by that.
You'd sign Finlay
apart
from Kilmarnock.
Turnbull,
Finlay from Kilmarnock. I was saying, we don't have a striker. Pick up Barofi for Buttons. He could do a shift as a fourth choice centre forward if we're not going to produce one ourselves, like an Aitchison or something like that. I like Stevie Mallon at Hibs. He looks like a good player. He could sit in front of a back four and spray passes about as well as a 35-year-old Scott Brown could, and he'd do it for cheaper and might develop into a better player. He could certainly shoot, can hit free kicks. The last year, there was people talking about Liam Donnelly at Motherwell. Apparently, he's a good player, a defensive midfielder, big lad.
What about Martin Boyle?
I've not seen enough of him. I mean, he would fall into the bracket, I guess. He's effective and he's fast. But he wouldn't be... I don't think he'd be better than Forrest, you know? Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's interesting. Yeah,
the Neil Lennon, again, getting back to the players that don't want to be here. So Neil Lennon is quoted as saying, "I'm not going," because he's been quizzed, he's been pressed on his comment about players who don't want to be there should leave. "I'm not going to go into it, but I'm putting it out there because it has been bugging me for a long, long time."
At the end of the day, that Neil Lennon has the power to punt them. You just turn into the board and you say, "I'm the manager and I'm advising that there's players here who've got their minds elsewhere, but can get good money for them and so good riddance." But the thing is, you need to do it quickly in order to get in replacements, as Anthony just said there. We don't want to get to a situation where we get into the first week in October, and then you lose Ayer and you lose Edward, and we don't have any replacements. But having said that, how many strikers do we need? You know, clearly Edwards is the best by a long shot. But even if Edwards was to leave, you still get three supposedly capable strikers there. And I do wonder if Ayeti was Edwards' replacement in advance. Different type of player, certainly. And he's not got firsthand, he doesn't look as if he's got the technique that Edwards got or the flair. But he seems more of a striker who wants to be in the penalty area. He doesn't want to go wide and create moves and get involved in a build-up. The big man just wants to get into the centre, which means that maybe if you had two good wide players putting balls into the box, and we certainly did enough of that tonight, to be honest. I mean, as I say, two or three times, the ball literally went across the face of goal when it needed a tap-in, and nobody had the presence or the instinct to get in the end of it, which is very disappointing.
So I was told, as I say, after the Kilmarnock game, that Lennon was pissed off with four players who weren't playing because they wanted to leave. The defence about them being there when they're not leaving would be that the problem is that the bigger leagues, or the leagues that their governments allowed them to play and finish their season, are not restarting for another couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So they're not signing people yet. And so, I suppose the problem would be agents might be getting sounded out for the likes of Ayer and Christie, and so they might be getting their heads turned about the prospect of money elsewhere.
You and I discussed this, Brian, I think a few weeks back, when we were talking about how I think it's October the 8th is the end of the transfer window.
Yeah.
Now, under normal circumstances, the end of the transfer window would have been in a couple of days' time, and then we'd have been safe for the rest of the season. And you're right there to say that because the bigger leagues are coming back now and they haven't really signed anybody yet, but you just know that in the next couple of weeks that the Spurs and the Arsenals, Man United's, Liverpool's are going to start splashing the cash to improve their teams before the kick-off of their domestic league. So as soon as I heard that, I thought that this is going to be bad for us, because I can truly see a case whereby it sort of happened with Tierney. You get to the 2 days maybe before the transfer window, or even a day before it ends, and somebody comes in with a big bid, and our board don't have the backbone to refuse that. Particularly tonight, whereby they've just seen £20 or £30 million, or however much you want to take it, fly out the window, because there ain't going to be any Champions League football this season. So as I said earlier there, we don't do losses. They will want to balance the books, and if that means sacrificing Edward, then they will see that as acceptable.
No, but I mean, the one thing I would say is my criticism of the club is that 10 in a row has taken priority over the future of the club. And so,
even that must be in doubt.
I don't think they would then sacrifice and punt Edward for cheap money. But the other thing I would say, if Lennon is saying he's pissed off with a number of players, that he won't name the names, but I'm saying that I think it's Incham, Christie, Ayer and Edward that he's specifically pissed off with, then we need to sell them because the manager wants rid of them.
Well, that's what I was saying. Lennon's got a power in his hands if he's not happy with him to do so. But, you know, this should be getting done behind the scenes. I wonder. I love Neil Lennon to bits. I've got the utmost admiration for him as a player, as a captain, as a manager. He's a Celt through and through. In my eyes, he's a legend. I wonder if he's thrown a couple of them under the bus tonight. Because rather than taking responsibility for the team selection and the blunder of not playing some sort of striker, he's trying to deflect the criticism onto somebody else. And that to me, that's pretty cheap.
Well, Anthony,
disappointed in that.
His comments sounded quite Steven Gerrard-esque to me.
To me, that's, you know, to me, it's not acceptable. He should be focusing on his own failings tonight. To put that right for the rest of the season. And if there is issues with people not trying or whatever it is, sort it behind the scenes, but don't make it public.
So, Anthony, what do you think?
I agree completely with Saint. I mean, it's a small-time move to try and deflect your own responsibility. You know, it's that person that does something stupid in the office and blames others, you know? It's quite unimpressive, and I don't know, just the way to get really daft. Do you know what I mean? The way he's dressed, do you know what I mean? That stupid black hoodie trackies combo, it's like, I mean, you don't need to have the waistcoat and the brogues. Do you know what I mean? There's some happy medium between us pretending we're something we're not, but it just looks so classless.
To be fair, Anthony, I mean, O'Neill was very similar. O'Neill had the old sweatshirt on with the sleeves rolled up and the socks over the tracksuits.
Aye, his rugby shirt was a sort of Clough tribute act.
You're right. And we Strachan was the same. Strachan was a tracksuit man. He was never one for wearing fancy gear.
But I mean, even, you know, if you look back at, you know, Lennon used to have the bespoke Nike gear, the black stuff that nobody else had. Which at least that looked quite smart, you know, as tracksuits go.
Yeah.
You know, this shitty Adidas jogger that he's wearing makes him look like... I saw someone tweeting that he looked like he'd popped out to get the milk. Do you know what I mean? That's what our Celtic manager looks like.
I know.
Which has obviously just been daft, but when he's doing a shite job when it matters, it's hard to get behind him.
I mean, the thing that's... In addition to the manager's selection, which is just, I find unfathomable, again, I really want, you know, he's deflected things by saying, oh, there's a number of players at the club who don't want to be here and it's all their fault. And I really wish somebody would be pressing him and saying, I get the point on Ayeti not being 100% fit, but Klamala has been at the club since January. Why have you mismanaged his fitness if he's not got an injury and it's just simply he's not fully fit? Why have you mismanaged his fitness? Why is nobody asking that question?
The thing that struck me tonight, wasn't it, and I'm sure it struck every Celtic fan, how could Klamala not start the game and play maybe 45 minutes or an hour if he wasn't fully fit, and then Ayeti come on either at half time or the hour mark? So the both of them get a run, and you have a natural striker who takes up positions in the penalty area to get in the end of the good work that everybody's doing. Now, I know we're really disappointed tonight. In general terms, we didn't play too badly. We created a number of chances. And there was a period just before they scored, maybe for about 20 minutes, that I turned around to my friend and said, we really need to score here because we're in the ascendancy. And if we get the second goal now, we can go on and win 3 or 4-1. But the problem comes... That Ferris Farris take heart from the fact that we had a good spell and we didn't score. All these boys were going to cross the goal and Cham hit the bar and the goalkeeper made a good save. And at that point, it becomes very frustrating and it gives them hope. And the game turned and that one ball up the park with a guy outpaces El Hamid and he scores the goal. So, again, we have to be more ruthless. When we are in the ascendancy and we are on top, you need to score. You need to take your chances.
You can't score if you don't play strikers.
Yeah, and you're preaching to the converted. I mean, that's what I'm saying there. Even a quarter-foot Griffiths would surely go at the end of something, right? And I'm not making a big issue of Griffiths because he's been out of order and his behaviour off the park's questionable. His professionalism is questionable as well. But at the end of the day, if he is a Celtic employee and we need a striker, he has to play. Because, you know, X amount of £1 million has just walked out the door.
So the other thing, Anthony, that gets me is the point I made just before Saint came on the podcast, or we were before. Our revenue is over four times their revenue.
Oft.
Right? And we keep getting knocked out in Europe by teams. Now, whether the manager picked the wrong team or whatever, the other thing that's staring me right in the face, Anthony, is our team cost vastly more than their team did. So how's that possible? Why do we keep... we are pissing money up against a wall continually. Mm-hmm. Anthony, what do you think the issue there is?
Like I say, we've got no policy other than this, you know, boom and bust, speculate to accumulate, you know, player trading. You know, we don't have anyone in charge that's, I mean, even like a Frank Lampard, you know, in a needs must situation last year, just started, you know, he threw in the youth team. Now everyone knew for years that Chelsea was producing good players. I'm not suggesting that we were going to produce players that of that quality, but there's really no reason why Man City and Chelsea have got that much of a head start on all that stuff, unless they're poaching and they're cheating and they're stealing kids from abroad and stuff like that. But ultimately, you should be producing your own players. And if we had a sort of Bilbao or Ajax-style...
Academy
that, or at least a philosophy to embrace their own academy, you know? Then, you know, you give boys a chance and, you know, some of them let you down, some of them don't, you know, but you don't just spend your entire existence trying to chop and change and buy guys that didn't cut it in the Premier League or guys that didn't cut it in the Bundesliga. And, you know, it's such a small percentage chance that it's going to kick on. I mean, just like that. Just to pick one example, you know, the boy from Slovakia, whose name I've already forgotten. What was his name?
Bio.
What a terrible signing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But Anthony, there seems to be another, I keep going about patterns, but you got Bangura about 10 years ago. In fact, it isn't even 10 years ago, it's about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And he looked like, frankly, a fish out of water. And then you had Amido Baldi, who looked, frankly, as if he had never seen a football. And then you sign this big guy, Bio. Now, they're sort of African strikers, big, tall guys. They're probably very athletic in as much as they're powerful and they can run. But I am at a loss of any scout of the three of them who went to watch them and come back with a positive report. It beggars belief.
At best, it's YouTube videos. You know, it's a 5 minutes of them scoring 20 goals in the Slovak League,
mm-hmm.
and leaving you thinking, all right, this boy can finish, you know, which, you know, isn't true. You know, there's more to it than that. I'm just looking at the Ferencvaros squad in front of me just now. You know, it's that sort of scattering of Bosnians and Belarusians and Hungarians, of course, Slovenians. You know, that is a... People are good at football in these parts of the world, you know? Their national teams are all full of very technically talented players. They're all big. They're all strong. You know, your Maravchiks and your Vargas, you know, we've looked in this market before. I doubt these guys are paying for a lot of money. That Karatan looked like a decent player. He's from the Ukraine.
Their most expensive player in their squad cost 1.8 million quid.
Mm.
Right, so Karatan's a Ukraine international. Nice. No, actually, he's played all the way through Ukraine's youth setup and then never played for the first team. But he's the... He looked good, decent tonight, you know, a big solid player.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, this summer, spent £4.95 million on Ayeti and £4.5 million on Barkas. So effectively spent virtually...
Nine and a half million quid.
Previous summer, or last season in total, £7.2 million on Julian, and then £3.6 million on Klamala.
Is that how much she cost?
Yep.
Seriously?
£3.5 million? £3.6 million on Klamala that the manager doesn't say is fit enough to play when our main striker's injured. £3 million on Bolingoli.
Oof.
£2 million on Soro, who can't get near the first team. He gets on the bench and that's it. Doesn't come on as a sub. £1.62 million on El Hamed, who played a strong contributing part in both goals, particularly the second. £3.69 million on Luca Connell. £369,000 on Luca Connell, who don't know where the hell he is, but he's only 360 grand. £342,000 on Frimpong. And then that was it. And then the summer before, or the season before, Edward had £9.27 million. Good signing. Bio, £2 million. Waste of money. Schwed, £1.8 million.
Waste of money.
Izaguirre, free transfer. Even that was a waste of money. Malumbu, free transfer. His wages were a waste of money. Tolyan, loan. Arzani, loan. Timothy Weir, loan. Oliver Burke, loan. Philip Benkovic, he was all right. Then the season before, in Chan, £4.5 million. Musonda, we paid £2.25 million for a loan deal. Hendry, 1.44. Johnny Hayes, 1.32.
Brian, I'll give you an example of the frustration. Is that this boy, Shane Duffy, right? There's been talk now for about a month that Celtic are interested in him, and that there must be something in it because every newspaper reports it, and even Shane Duffy's relations and Twitter or whatever it is have commented on it. If we are interested in him, you need to call his bluff. You need to say, listen, we're going to give you 48 hours. We'll make you an offer. If you're interested, let's talk. But after the 48 hours passes, we're going to somebody else. Because we're getting messed about here pretty badly. I don't know what his game is, what he's hanging on for. I don't know even know if Celtic are maybe hoping that Brighton are going to reduce the fee or something like that, trying to pull a stroke in that respect, because Lowell's famous for that kind of thing. But either way, we need, if you're going to sign him, get him in.
Anthony?
He is. I've been very aware of Duffy being a big Tim for a long, long time, but ultimately it comes down to that thing, the Damien Duff, oh, I wish I'd signed for Celtic. It's like, well, you fucking could have. Do you know what I mean? Every one of you, Robbie Keane, Duffy, Damien Duff, Shea Given, if you wanted to play for Celtic, you would have and could have. So, you know, wind it in. You know, I don't need to hear this at the end of your career that you had your chance. Exactly what Stephen just said. Fucking send him a text message. Oi, Duffy, do you want to play for Celtic? Yes. Sign him. No. Fuck off. We'll find someone else. Because, yeah, we're just getting played there.
But I went through that squad, right? And the players that we would say have not been that, in general, have not been good value for money and it's a waste of time, are the players in and around 1.5-2 million quid? You know, what is... The people like Soro, the people like Bio, the people like Kouassi, the guys that we sign in and around 1-3 million quid who seem to be a complete waste of space. Yet we've just been knocked out of Europe again by a team whose best players are in the price band that when we spend that money, they're not good enough to play for us. This is a bit that I can't get my head around. You know, so...
Yeah, you're right.
Either we are massively overpaying for all our players, and I know people talk about, oh, there's a premium because it's Scotland, and I do get that, but, you know, so how come teams in Hungary don't have to pay a premium or Romania for Cluj don't have to pay a premium for people to live in Romania?
Yeah, I know where you're coming from there. I think there has to be a real interrogation and examination of what our, if we have any, what our scouting network is. You know, but how we get players, who comes in, who advises them, is it agents that are coming in? As Anthony said there, are we that bad that we're just watching YouTube videos? Because I'm looking at the boy Taylor tonight, and he didn't play badly. He always, one thing you can never doubt him for is his effort. But so many moves break down when it gets to Taylor left, because he approaches the last man, and I'm not comparing him to Tierney, but Tierney would take on the last man and whip an early crossing, and you might get a goal, or he would beat a man to some degree and start an attack. Taylor gets the ball, and his first reaction is not to get past the player, it's to pass it inside or pass the ball back. And there's so many moves that are breaking down because we switch the play very quickly, we get it to him, and the hope is that he does a frimpong and belts down the wing and gets a cross in, and it isn't happening. Now, I look across at Rangers, and the one guy that they have got that I think is a right good player is the guy Barisic, because when he does get forward, he can deliver a terrific ball, terrific cross into dangerous areas, and he's good at taking free kicks. Now, he came for Croatian football, and he didn't come for a lot of money. So it does go to prove, maybe if you do have a scouting network or you've got your finger in the pulse, you can pick players up that are good. But we don't seem to be able to do that. For whatever reason, we seem to buy these guys, and, you know, three or four of the signings, the 75% of the signings that we make are actually very poor, and it's costing us money. And it's costing us money in a frustrating way, because you're selling somebody like Tierney for £25 million, and you're basically three quarters of that, you're pissing against the wall, because you're just buying poor quality players. Poor scouting.
So, Anthony, because I don't want to keep you up or even me up much longer, what's your thoughts? Will we look back when we secure the 10 and say, well, getting knocked out of the Champions League at least gave us a break? What's your thoughts on the coming immediate period as a result of that result?
Well, obviously, at the start of the podcast, you know, I was calling from the manager's head. We're now a little bit into it. Maybe I don't. He's clearly not resigning, so we're stuck with him. We're flat track bullies. That's what we are, and we'll get up and we'll outrun everyone domestically, and we'll win the league. I think we might not. You know, poor decisions might be made, short and long term, that puts us in a position that we've got too much to catch up or something like that. Obviously because of the COVID-19 thing and the Bolingoli thing, they could rack up a lead. And although I think Rangers are largely shite, I think people that are on Twitter laughing at Ryan Kent need a bit of a reality check. Ryan Kent's good. He might not be Jimmy Johnston, but he's bloody good. And if you watch Rangers play week in, week out, you've got a guy with a fire in his belly, a great touch, who is increasingly scoring goals with his left and right foot. So if all they've got is Barisic and Kent, that'd still be enough to win a lot of SPFL games. And if we're not careful and we make some silly decisions, it could come back and haunt us.
I remember when Rangers were going for the 10 in a row. They played against Gothenburg in the qualifiers and they get pumped 3-0. And I remember watching that game on STV and I thought to myself, if we don't win the league this year, we'll never win it because they're there for the taking. And a few weeks later, they played Strasbourg and they lost home and away in the, what would they be, in the UEFA Cup nowadays rather than the Europa League. And the reason why I'm making this point is, if you're a Rangers fan sitting watching that tonight, you'd be thinking to yourself, the same thing we thought all the years ago, if we don't win that league this season, we'll never win it because Celtic, quite frankly, are there for the taking this season, much more so than we've been previously. So if anybody's in any doubt that it's not going to be a dogfight this season, it's going to go right to the wire because, it concerns me at Lennon's outburst tonight more than anything else. I think his outburst is actually worse than the defeat in some ways because it shows you that things are not right behind the scenes. And if things aren't right behind the scenes, then it'll all go tits up at some point.
All right, okay. So nice, cheery, upbeat podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I still find it incomprehensible that he didn't play a striker and then comes out and says, oh, well, we dominated and if we'd just taken our chances.
Well, let me ask you one thing, Brian, before we go, and I'm not trying to provoke you here.
Mm-hmm.
But with the benefit of hindsight, would you have played Griffiths tonight?
No. I'd have played Kalamala.
But Kamala's no fit, obviously.
Well, now it's Griffiths, obviously.
No, but the thing about Griffiths is I don't think it's fitness. I think he's out of favour.
I don't think Kamala's not fit then. Not unfit.
Well, whatever, I think there's obviously, as I said, Lennon has to take it and the criticism that's coming his way and I'm disappointed that he's
I wouldn't have played Griffiths. It's been a bit blunt, but I wouldn't have played Griffiths because he patently has let the manager down on his unavailability too many occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't rely on that guy, then just disregard him. And that's what I'm saying. They should have punted him, stuck him out on loan to Aberdeen where, you know, he doesn't play against us, but at least he scores against other people. Do something like that with him, but don't have him hanging around the club if you don't want him.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it incomprehensible that Klamala was considered fit enough to be in the bench and not do anything. And when it was as obvious as a nose in the end of your face that we needed to have a striker on the pitch, it took him to the 78th minute to put a striker on the pitch. When you're two in the bench, that for me is unforgivable.
Something is just cropped into my mind actually that this time last year when we get put out with Cluj, and in fact the first point that's worth making here is we're not getting put out in the last game of the qualifiers now, we're getting put out in the second round. We're actually getting worse because there's four rounds to get through here and there was a period there where we're getting to the last round and getting beat against maybe reasonable opposition. Now we're getting put out in the second round with teams that are well below us in the coefficient levels. But the I actually forgot what I was going to say there. I've talked myself out of it. What was I saying?
One of the ironies is when we got the UEFA, the Europa League draw last year, I looked at all three of those better teams and thought, we'll win this group. And we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you could argue that they're no Champions League material, though.
No, but they were better than Cluj.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to say. Now you've mentioned Cluj. This time last year, Lennon blundered by playing Callum McGregor at left back, and that was seen as a tactical error in terms of team selection, which cost us the game. And now we're 12 months forward, and he's done it again in terms of team selection. You can't get away for the fact that no matter what he says about the players, that he has to take this, any criticism coming to you. I'm tempted to say he should take it in the chin, but it brings back memories of Tony Mowbray, and it's a bad enough night without sort of bringing Tony Mowbray back into Vogue.
Right. So there's not much positive to say. The manager got his selection wrong. And for me, the very simple thing is we have a vastly more immeasurably more expensive squad than the team we played tonight do, and we get beat. So there's major structural issues within the club.
I mean, in theory, these games should be academic, because the coefficient thing gives you an indication of the standard of the team you're playing. So I don't even know what Ferenc Varos' coefficient is. It's probably in single figures, right? And we've got a coefficient of 34 or something like that. And the worry is, if you keep losing games like this, our coefficient level goes down. And before you know it, when we're playing qualifiers, we're playing against the seeded teams, and it becomes infinitely harder to get through. So the whole thing about being seeded through these things is it's meant to be, hypothetically, it's meant to be an easier journey to get through it. And that's not how it's working. That's three seasons in a row now, put out the really, really mediocre opposition.
Although, ironically, next season we will start at the seat at the round after this.
Aye.
If we win the league.
If we win the league, yeah.
If we win the league.
Right. On that upbeat note, I will say Anthony Murray and St. Anthony, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brian.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Seems a bit off to say my usual off. I hope you enjoyed that. And if you think it was being a bit over-dramatic, Anthony and I were being a bit over-dramatic saying about sack the manager, yeah, I take your point, and I would accept that. But equally, I just find it incomprehensible that the manager after the game would say, we created enough chances to win that. He's right on that. But he's the guy who didn't pick a striker. And I just can't get my head around why... Kamala, I get the Ayeti thing, why Kamala didn't start. And is it code for he's not good enough? And if it's code for he's not good enough, then what we've got, did a quick back of a fag packet calculation, is Kamala, Bolingoli, Sorrow, Elhamed, Shved, Bio, and the very average Greg Taylor. That's £18 million that's been spent roughly in the last, this season in the last 18 months. And on players that if they disappear from the squad you wouldn't notice. Imagine we'd spend that £18 million on three £6 million players. A left back at £6 million, a defensive midfielder at £6 million, and a striker at £6 million. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Beattie, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.